chronic wasting disease is a transmissible brain-wasting spongiform encephalopathy that is spreading throughout the deer and elk population of the West. Some say the best antidote to the debilitating transmissible disease is the wolf. And that leads us to ask, should the strong be freed to eat the weak?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, thank you, Will Strickland, and hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,101st edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Manila who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at MetroFarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason, how you doing?
Glad to be here.
Question for you.
All right.
Do you think we should feed animals in the winter to help them get through the winter?
I don't see why not. Nothing hurts to give a helping hand once in a while.
Okay. Bella Hedeke, what do you think? Should we feed the animals in winter to help them get through that long, cold period?
You know, I have a feeling there's a story I haven't heard of, but I agree. I think maybe if they need some help during the winter and we want to keep their population numbers up, then we should help.
Good enough. Well, folks, chronic wasting disease is spreading throughout the deer and elk population of the West. Chronic wasting disease is a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy similar to mad cow disease, scrapie, and Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in that it eats away the brains of the afflicted. Though no human has yet been identified as to having contracted chronic wasting from an animal, the potential to do so has been demonstrated in an in vitro cell-free experiment. Chronic wasting disease is transmitted from one animal to the next via saliva. An afflicted animal chews on grass. The grass then transmits the disease to the next animal. Take a chew. One of the vectors that is said to be spreading chronic wasting disease is the wild elk herd being fed throughout the winter in Wyoming's winter feeding grounds. The claim is that chronic wasting disease spreads rapidly through the closely confined feeding areas, much like a norovirus does in a cruise ship. Boom, everybody has norovirus. In spring, the elk move out into the surrounding countryside, taking with them the chronic wasting disease, and that, it is said, certainly one of the ways chronic wasting disease is getting around. Question, can chronic wasting disease be managed or will it grow into a catastrophe as did mad cow disease in the UK? Bella here is too young to remember mad cow disease. How about you, Jason? Do you remember mad cow disease?
Oh, yeah.
You
that
do?
That was a scary one.
Okay. Well, Mark Cook, who is president of Wolves of the Rockies, claims that wolves are the perfect means to control the spread of chronic wasting disease among elk, deer, and moose. And he says it doesn't cost anything. This assertion leads us to ask, should wolves be freed to eat the weak and diseased, or should the weak and diseased be protected from hungry wolves? So let's ask Mark Cook, who is president of the Wolves of the Rockies. Mark, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Show.
Welcome, Mike, and to all your listeners. Good morning.
You know,
it's a great... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just have to ask before we take another step here, what's it like to be president of Wolves?
In Montana, it can be contentious at times. It's getting better now, but it for a while there, it was very, very contentious.
I would suspect so, being a native Montanan and well aware of the conflict up there. I guess wolves in Montana are kind of like President Trump is. You either really love him or you really hate him, right?
Yeah, it's getting better. That's our mission.
Okay, good.
To make people more tolerant.
Well, good. You're up there in the Bitterroot Valley, western Montana.
Yes, sir.
Are you a native Montanan?
No, I'm actually from the East Coast. I went into military. After I got out of the military, I love wildlife. I love horseback riding. So Montana was the best bet.
There you go. Well, I have to ask again, do you think you would be president of Wolves of the Rockies? Were you a native Montanan?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There needs to be a balance. And for the longest time, it swayed in one direction. It was wolves were getting taken advantage of by the livestock industry and by the hunting industry in form of like the local or national hunting organizations. They never had a voice. And they do play a role, an important role in an ecosystem, and that wasn't being heard.
And you've been working with the Wolves of the Rockies for how long?
Oh, gosh, 5 years now.
5 years now. Because there was a tremendous conflict with respect to, you know, the natives of the Rocky Mountain West, the farmers, the ranchers, the hunters, the fishermen. You know, when the wolves were reintroduced, it wasn't exactly, you know, like they were welcomed, were they?
No, no. I think a lot of the problem was it's not so much the wolves is how they were reintroduced. I think if they were protected under the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, and let instead of a reintroduction, if they were let to migrate out of Canada through the corridor, the Glacier National Park corridor, it would have taken longer to get them on the ground here. But I think people would have eased into it, and the wildlife would have made adjustments in their behavior more timely.
Yeah. Well, I remember the reintroduction because I've been covering the show, the story for quite a while. And my first story about the reintroduction of wolves was a kitchen table remote from a sheep rancher near Big Timber, Montana, which is right in the lee of Yellowstone Park. And so we were sitting there at the breakfast table at his, in his kitchen and talking about what his experience, of course, and his experience was the fact that the wolves would come down and eat his sheep, and there wasn't much he could do about it other than fill out some papers and, you know, get a reimbursement.
Right.
And so halfway through this program, this live program, the back door to the kitchen swung open, and in comes the biologist who is responsible for reintroducing the whacking antenna in his hand. And he looked at the rancher, and he said, "She's back," which, of course, meant that the she-wolf was back to eat more sheep. But, you know, as long as he was standing there, I said, "Excuse me, would you sit down and talk to us?" And my question to him was, "Why did you reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone Park?" And I said, "Was it because you want to control the population of cervids, of deer and elk?" And he said, no, we're reintroducing them because city people want them back." How would you respond to that?
Well, you know, I can't speak for that individual, and I wasn't there, but I will say this. There is no doubt that the numbers of elk in the park, the Yellowstone National Park, were artificially high, and this was causing browsing problems, grazing problems in the park for, you know, riverbanks, those type of things.
Right.
And it echoes out as far as the bison. I mean, you have the elk eating the grass, competing for grass that the bison need also. So, you know, keep in mind, you're going to hear this argument a lot. You know, the greater Yellowstone herd was 20,000 elk, or I've heard different numbers, but I'm going to run with 20,000 elk. And now they're down to a healthy, sustainable number of about 6,000 elk. And you're going to hear the argument made that the wolves are killing all these elk. But what they're not telling you is in the winter of 1996, we had a really bad winter, and we lost over 9,000 elk just to the winter. Now, you got to keep in mind that had the elk been, I guess, healthy to begin with, they might have survived that winter. And because they weren't healthy, we lost 9,000 elk. So it sounds on the surface that elk are being killed by the wolves. But in fact, winter has killed a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back to that original question, though. Do city people want the wolves back?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
I mean, who?
Just city people, though.
Yeah. If you think about the people who line the roads through the Lamar River Valley and Yellowstone Park, they come from all over the world to look at the wolves.
Right. Now, do you think that's a bad thing?
No, I don't think I'm just a storyteller. You know, I'm fascinated by both sides of this story.
Sure.
Because both sides of the story have a great story to tell, and it's kind of a head scratcher. Sure. But your notion that we can control this chronic wasting disease with wolves is really quite a stopper. And so sure. We're going to have to take a break here in a moment. But when we come back, I'd like to address that. And the chronic wasting disease that is working its way throughout the Intermountain West. And, you know, that's a head scratcher as well. So this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, it's the 1,101st edition of the Food Chain. Today we're taking on a real interesting subject, the chronic wasting disease, which is a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy that's working its way through the cervid population of the Intermountain West, actually throughout the west of the United States, 32 states, I believe it's in now. What can be done to control it? Well, Mark Cook says we can control it with wild wolves. Do stay tuned. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. We will be right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it. Earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it, it's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Folks, it is a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, which is kind of like mad cow disease. Remember the mad cow disaster? Oh, my goodness. It was found in the beef of the United Kingdom. They had to kill so many of the cattle. The people caught the disease from the cattle. 117 people died. Bad stuff. It eats away at your brain. Well, fortunately, nobody has yet to be identified as having contracted chronic wasting disease from deer or elk. But in lab tests, they have proven it possible to do so. So this disease is now spreading throughout 23 states of the western United States. And it is just moving in the populations of wild animals. So one of the possible vectors of this is the elk herd of Wyoming, which is being fed all winter long, and the elk transmit the disease via saliva. So an elk chews on a piece of grass, the grass carries the disease to the next animal it chews on the grass. So that's the situation. We have a very tough disease spreading throughout the United States. How can we control it? So Mark Cook, president of Wolves of the Rockies, what led you to throw out your notion that they can be controlled by wolves?
That's a good question. Okay, there's an individual named Valerie Geist, and Geist is an opponent to having wolves. So my thought is this. If this individual is willing to come out and say wolves will certainly bring the disease to a halt. Now, here's a guy that doesn't like wolves to begin with. Now, if he will say something like that, and he is, you know, anti-wolf, it has some merit, because not only is he a doctor, a smart guy, done a lot of wolf research, it sparked my imagination to start digging further into this. Mm-hmm. There's a few studies out that indicate that, like you said, chronic wasting disease is coming, and there's a thought from an individual that says, because wolves were eradicated to begin with, this is where they got their foothold, the chronic wasting disease in with the ungulates, the elk.
As a quick aside, what happens to the ungulates when they get chronic wasting disease is that they become weak and feeble.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And if you're a grazer, an ungulate, and you're weak and diseased, you know you're going to be in trouble.
Absolutely. There's less vigilance. And you're right. You're absolutely right. They're more concerned about eating than they are about being eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only a natural fit that for part of the reason, as I stated earlier, that because wolves were eradicated, that's what gave this chronic wasting disease a foothold in with these animals. So why wouldn't it be a natural fit, both financially and for the wolves, to be allowed to do what they do best? And that is, you know, they it's not that they can't take down strong prey, healthy prey, but it's a dangerous business. So why wouldn't they be allowed to kill weaker animals and, in doing so, strengthening the pack or the herd?
Yeah, all clever predators pick on the weak, right?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, if you're a clever predator and planning on surviving, you look for the weak, and that's what you go after.
Sure.
And chronic wasting disease, of course, makes strong animals weak, and therefore a good target. Going back to the disease, it started in 1967 in northern Colorado, now in 23 different states, but not in Montana. How on earth does Montana keep chronic wasting disease out of the state?
Well, Montana's got its own problem with brucellosis.
Brucellosis.
So that's another can of worms, so to speak. But what I guess, how are they keeping it out? It's a good question. I think it's a matter of time. But I think we can either, we can stop it or slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
We allow nature to take its course.
If you look at a map of the spread, you see that the chronic wasting disease is almost filling up Wyoming and Colorado. And it goes right up to the border of Montana, and it stops. And I look at that and go, how on earth do you keep wild animals from walking across the state line?
Yeah, you don't. You just don't. And I mean, Idaho doesn't have it either, I believe.
Idaho does not have it either?
Huh. I don't believe so. So it's made its way to South Dakota, North Dakota, and it's into Wyoming. So why it hasn't come to Montana yet, I just can't fathom a clue. I just don't have a guess at it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, if we have a natural predator that works 24/7, doesn't cost us anything. I mean, you're going to get the argument of depredation with cattle. There's 2.5 million cattle in Montana. We've lost 50 cows last year. Now, I understand that there's financial loss there, but it is reimbursed through the livestock loss program. So my point is this. If you have a critter that's willing to do this job and it doesn't cost us anything, why aren't we letting him do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any alternative? Anybody, said, well, yeah, that's a very mean way of controlling a disease. But is there an alternative to wolves? Or what happened? I guess the flip side of the question is, if we do not allow wolves, if we do not free the wolves to eat the weak and diseased, then what?
Good question. Here's the thing. Tourism is, let me go back to tourism. We were talking about Yellowstone. Tourism brings a lot of money to Montana. It's the second largest producer of revenue for Montana, next to livestock producing. Now, Wisconsin spent $27 million to kill off their whitetail deer herds because of chronic wasting disease.
That was Wisconsin?
Wisconsin. They spent $27 million. So my argument is this. Montana can't afford to kill off their elk herds. Tourism and hunting is too large of an industry and would devastate Montana if people didn't come here to either hunt, fish, photography. Most people come here to visit Yellowstone National Park. So it's a huge source of revenue, and to kill off a herd would be expensive to begin with, or to kill off the elk would be expensive to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm opposed to it. But think about this, $27 million is what it costs to do that. Well, Wolf will do it for nothing.
Yeah. So Wisconsin was faced, why did they kill off all the white-tailed deer? Why didn't just let the deer run wild?
You know, I don't know why they made the decision, the management decision that they did. But they did kill, they spent $27 million to kill these white-tailed deer off.
Wow.
You know, I wasn't involved in the decision process on that, but just think about that. That's a lot of money. And for Montana, most people come here to hunt, fish, to see the outdoors, photography. We can't afford to take a hit like that.
Well, you know, what it does indicate, certainly, is the fact that Wisconsin thought enough of the problem to spend $27 million to do something about it.
Sure.
So that would be the alternative then. It does not appear it to be an alternative to do nothing. Otherwise, Wisconsin would have done nothing.
Right.
But instead, they spent $27 million to do something, which was to kill off the entire herd.
Right. It's tragic.
So, okay, folks.
You have to take it to. Oh, go ahead.
Well, this is a Food Chain Radio program, Michael Oles. We're going to take a quick break right now. Question of the day. Should wolves be free to eat the weak and diseased, or should the weak and diseased be protected from hungry wolves? And if we do free the wolves, what will that mean to people walking out in the countryside? Oh, my goodness. And if we don't, what will that mean for all of the populations of cervids, of ungulates, of deer and elk and moose? What will happen to them? 831-479-1080. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Oldson.
Well, let's go back a little bit. A long time ago, maybe 10 years ago, my wife and I and my brother-in-law went for a hike through Yellowstone's Lamar River Valley in springtime. And we were heading up to Jade Peak, and we walked through the Lamar River Valley and ran into a nursery of elk. I mean, there must have been thousands of them. And as we walked through them towards the mountain trail, they had conversations about us. They talked about us as we walked through them. And there were cows that were tending the young, and the cows would talk with each other, and like, here comes these crazy people, and they're walking right amongst us. But I'm thinking they're not like that anymore. They must be a lot more frightened now, because that valley, the Lamar Valley, is home to wolves. Must be different, Mark.
Well, you're absolutely right. You have the Lamar Canyon Pack at one end. You have the Slough Creek Pack. And you have the canyons that come over, the Junction View Pack. There's quite a few wolf packs in that area. Mm-hmm. I think the park currently has around 9 or 10 packs, and they're ranging around altogether total around 100 wolves.
Well, now, I'm wondering if those wolves, the only predator I think that was really active back in those days, maybe coyotes as well, but grizzly bears, or the bears, would come down and find the baby elk and eat them if they could.
Sure.
But now a lot more pressure on the elk because of those wolves. I'm wondering, you know, in looking at the spread of chronic wasting disease throughout the Intermountain West, you see it going right up to the border of Montana, and it ends there, and there are no chronic wasting disease cases found in Montana. I'm wondering if the wolves that are in Yellowstone are not part of the reason that it isn't making it into Montana.
Mike, I think you're absolutely right, and I think it applies to the entire border. Although eastern Montana isn't great wolf country, northwest is better. I can't find an argument to oppose your thinking, is what I'm saying.
Okay, Bella, now it's time for your question.
Hi, Mark. So I've been listening to you guys, kind of a layperson in this topic, but you guys keep saying that the wolves are being contained and that you need to free them. How are they being contained? Are they, how are they being contained, in a sense?
Mark?
Good question. I think the only way they can be contained is their natural territory. And let's face it, the biggest factor for wolves moving is for mating, finding a spouse, so to speak, and prey base. So if the prey base, and that's part of the problem on the eastern side of Montana, the prey base isn't there. They need that tree base, the evergreens. So I would suspect that the reason that they haven't made it to the eastern Montana border in any large numbers is because the prey just isn't there and the terrain is different.
Well, the wolves have made it throughout the West now. I understand there's even a wolf or a pair of wolves in Northern California.
Sure, yeah. California is on the brink of having more and more wolves, which is a good thing. It's a positive. I think people have a tendency to overreact. And let's be honest, in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, there's a strong, and it's going to sound different, but there's a strong resentment for federal government. So whenever the federal government comes here, for example, the wolf reintroduction, let's face it, most of the people didn't want wolves to be reintroduced into Yellowstone, but it went ahead anyways. This left a bad taste in the local state population for the federal government.
Mm-hmm. What are they afraid of?
Good question. It's just going to sound sarcastic, but it's not meant to be. There's a strong spirit here of the West that don't tell me what to do. But it's interesting when there is a subsidy to be handed out by the federal government. They sure like the federal government then.
Well, you know, I guess I was raised in that neck of the woods and so know the sentiment pretty well. My father-in-law tells a story of his grandparents who came down from Canada and built themselves a little sod hut in eastern Montana. And got some horses, and they were trying to make it as homesteaders there.
Sure.
And one night the wolves came and chased the horses away, and the horses ran back to where they came from, which was 100 miles away. So the grandfather hiked back 100 miles to get his horses, because horses were that precious, leaving grandmother home alone. And at night, he tells the story of the wolves surrounding that house, which had no windows and it had really no door. And all she had to protect herself was a frying pan to make noise with. And so she was there alone in a little sod house surrounded by wolves. And, you know, I think there's still an element of that fear in
sure.
those who live, you know, out in the sticks, that you could be walking along a road some night and all of a sudden there are wolves.
Right. I agree, Mike. I choose to live on the threshold of the national forest.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of horses. I have, you know, other critters that hang around the house, but my thought is this. If a mountain lion comes through my yard, or if a grizzly bear comes through my yard, or if a wolf comes through my yard, which does happen, if I didn't want to see these animals, or if I was afraid of these animals, why would I move to where I moved? So if you're uncomfortable living in an environment where there is wildlife, that you are no longer the apex predator, so to speak, then why did you move to where you moved?
Mm-hmm. Or that's where you were raised, you know, that's where you came from.
Sure.
Yeah. And so you're kind of stuck with that notion, you know, that I remember in the Paradise Valley one evening, we were staying with some friends, and they said, oh, yeah, there's wolves here. If you want to hear them, just go up park on the road there and take yourself a glass of wine and you'll hear the wolves come out at night. And they, when they came out at night, they howled. and they were like a bunch of raucous teenagers, you know. Oh, and the cattle down in the valley started crying out in fear.
Sure.
And because they knew the bad boys were on the rove. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're taking on a very interesting subject, the chronic wasting disease that's spreading throughout the cervid population of the western United States, 23 states. People have not been identified as having contracted chronic wasting disease, but it is a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, which means it transmits from one animal to the next, and it is transmitted rapidly throughout the United States. Can we, should we, use wolves, free them, to go eat those diseased animals? What do you think? 831-479-1080.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
What do you think about that, folks? Should we free wolves to eat the weak and diseased cervids, the deer, elk, moose? And what better way to do it? But if we do, how exactly do we free the wolves to do the job, Mark?
That's a good question. It comes down to social tolerance. I believe that, let's be frank, most wildlife will die a violent death regardless. So to say that, you know, it's gonna die a violent death because of wolves, that's what nature does. I just think we need to be cautious. If there is room for these wolves to disperse and expand their packs, we need to allow them to do it, without, being harassed too much. We have an incredibly long hunting season. They're allowed to be trapped. Each individual can kill up to 5 wolves. I think we need to dial it back a little bit and, learn as we go. I don't think there's any silver bullet here, so to speak, to beat this chronic wasting disease back. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake about this.
So the way to do it is to allow them to do it.
Absolutely.
So and that's how
If they run into problems with cattle, there's things we can do. I hate to see wolves killed. I'm against wolves being killed for doing what they do. But we still have some terrain where we can work these wolves. My hat is off to some of the livestock producers in Montana. They're starting to get involved with non-lethal measures. These non-lethal measures will stop wolves from depredating or discourage wolves from depredating on their cattle and their other livestock. Mm-hmm. When we do this, it applies the right stimulus to the wolf to go out and kill what it should be killing, deer, elk, and other wildlife.
And non-lethal means you mean big dogs?
It can be dogs, it can be flattery, it can be radio collars. Mm-hmm. There's a great program in the Blackfoot called the Blackfoot Challenge. That they use high-tech stuff to let each other neighbor know if there's wolves or grizzly bears on their property. We can do this. We just have to want to do it.
And there it is. Well, what do you think, folks? 831-479-1080. Should we free the wolves to take care of the chronic wasting disease? Dee Dee, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mark, fascinated you're on this program this morning. It's interesting timing. My husband and I just bought a home in Teton Valley, Idaho. We have a pretty good population of wolves surrounding the valley, but they typically don't come down there. Although they're starving this year, so they are coming down through the timberline and they're eating people's dogs and, you know, chickens and that kind of stuff. I for a year now, we bought the house last year. The communities out there are polarized over the wolves. You must know that. I'm stunned, you know, yet people are really being on their best behavior, even though they lose, you know, they'll lose a couple of head of sheep in one night, and the wolves will kill their Great Pyrenees. They'll kill the Great Pyrenees first, and then they'll go after the sheep. And most of those sheep are dying because they're so scared they're trampling and suffocating each other, and then the wolves will maybe eat one or two of them. In all of Idaho, for example, in more of the timber towns, they've stopped even letting their kids stay at more of the isolated bus stops. And, of course, we've got a timber wolf. We don't have the Rocky Mountain wolf, which was pretty typical long ago in the lower 48. In my estimation, I can't understand why, in God's name, the Fish and Wildlife Service introduced an eating machine like the timber wolf. You know, they run in packs of up to 24. They're hungry all the time. They have a great, amazing hierarchy, and all they're doing is looking to eat. And the, you know, so genetically, I don't know why they've done this. It's a little startling that they didn't pay attention more to the Rocky Mountain variety and try to introduce them back and be patient with that introduction.
You know, that's an excellent comment, Dee Dee. I saw a wolf pelt measured 7'1" from the nose to the end of the tail. 7'1". Mark?
You know, they do get big, but I will say this. The average wolf in Montana weighs around 100 pounds. I know they did dart a wolf in Yellowstone National Park. It weighed 141 pounds, and that pack had a tendency to be larger because they preyed on bison.
Oh.
So it just naturally got bigger. So it needed to be bigger to survive. But there's a lot of talk about this wolf coming from Canada. And yes, they did come from Canada, but the research was done by the individuals like Carter Neumeier and Doug Smith, Mike Phillips. All these guys did a lot of homework on getting the best possible wolf as close to we could to reintroduce into the park. Wolves are wolves. You know, yes, some packs do get large, but the average pack where I live is 5 wolves to a pack.
What do you say to Dee Dee's comment that that people are afraid to leave their children alone at bus stops?
Well, history will show you that as far as I know, there's only 2 people been killed by wolves. More people die from bee stings than by wolf attacks. Wolves are naturally shy, and they don't like us to begin with. Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, Dee Dee.
Mark, Carol, and you, out of respect, to respect the apex predation in the Rockies, you are also protecting your kids. Regardless, I was the Department of Interior for 10 years, Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park.
Dee Dee, we have to go to break. Stay with us, folks. We will be right back. Do stay tuned.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get 2 friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get 2 friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is 2 numbers. One is 2, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge 2 local bucks each day. Get 2 others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, they are out there, the diseased animals spreading throughout the West. Chronic wasting disease, a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy like mad cow disease. What to do about it? Dee Dee, quick question. Are you still there, Dee Dee?
Yeah, I hope I'm not seeming disrespectful to Mark. I have respect for both sides. Back in the day when I was running around the backcountry with California black bears, we all know how predictable they are. They don't generally charge or attack people, in fact, ever. But as soon as we get into the Rockies and Canada and some of the other really remote areas, bears become extremely unpredictable, grizzlies and black bears. That said, wolves, this is very new I mean, wolves are not new to us as human beings, but to try to manage wildlife, in my experience, has been mostly a lot of bittersweet and a lot of failures. And as a mother now, I understand. When I was running around back in the day and working for them, National Park Service, I really was a lot more liberal in my thinking. But now I really understand both sides, especially parents, you know, for example, in the more isolated areas like Wallace, Idaho. I understand both sides. Plus, where we're moving, people are not even talking about it. They don't want to talk about it. They're mad. They're mad at each other.
Let me ask you a question, Dee Dee. What happens if we don't allow the wolves to moderate this chronic wasting disease?
Nobody's going to not allow wolves to do anything. They don't stay in boundaries. Bears don't stay in boundaries. Wolverines don't stay. Nothing stays in a boundary. They're out. I understand what you're talking about in theory, but these guys are already out and about. And, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service is already hiring bounty hunters to kill a lot of them in Idaho because the population has just taken off. So that's sad, you know. So what are we managing exactly? Just this back and forth, tug and push and pull of, oh, no, now we're killing them. Oh, no, now there's too many of them. I waited a little, taken a little more time to study this about the genetics and the wolf to leave down here, which was here originally in history, not bring these animals down here. But, hey, that's just my opinion.
Well, and thank you for making it. We really appreciate it, Dee Dee. Great call. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Let's see. We can have Rory. Are you there, Rory?
I'm here. Thanks for taking my call. And I share some of Dee Dee's concerns about how these wolves are managed. And they will have to be managed or they'll have their way. Like she said, it goes into the sheep herd and it kills the sheepdog first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a powerful animal. And I know your guest knows that. Question I have for your guest is, what's the status of these wolves? Are they considered endangered, protected? What recourse do livestock owners have with obtaining depredation permits to deal with nuisance wolves?
Well, you have just about 10 seconds to answer the question, Mark. What do you think? Thank you, Rory. Mark?
Well, that's a great question. I know I can only speak for Montana, but I would like to touch on Idaho a little bit. Idaho has the most heavy-handed wolf policy, management policy on the books. They have the longest hunting and trapping season for wolves.
And with that, we're going to have to end it because we're out of time. What a good question, though, and what a great guest. Thank you, Mark Cook, president of Wolves of the Rockies. I always wanted to be president of Wolves. That must be an exciting job, Mark. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.